good afternoon, Juno. It's just a couple of seconds before 3 o'clock. Pat Moore, your host today for a Juno Afternoon. We have a wonderful lineup of guests today. We're going to hear about the Pillars of America series. Jamie Letterman and Eric Forst will be here in about 5 minutes, and we'll talk about the upcoming three speakers who will be visiting Juno during the month of April and into May. Talking to some folks who have been out of town. Near the end of the show, we expect some school kids from the JSD system, I think high schoolers, who have been down in Florida building a Habitat for Humanity house. And we'll also be hearing about a project which is going to be presented at the Nugget Mall Saturday from 11 to 3:30, the Australia Project Fair. And those are the events that will be coming up on today's program, so stay tuned for Juno Afternoon today. Next is National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. This week, the Cleveland Indians had their season home opener, squaring off against the New York Yankees. The game included familiar sights and sounds, like choruses of Take Me Out to the Ball Game. But as WCPN's Brian Bull reports, there was another familiar and more controversial display.
Since 1992, the Committee of 500 Years of Dignity and Resistance has marched over to protest the Cleveland Indians team name and their mascot, Chief Wahoo. Marjorie Villafane is a Dakota Hopapa Indian, originally from North Dakota. She and about 8 other Native American demonstrators stood outside the main gate, holding up banners and signs. Villafane says the walk over to Progressive Field was interesting, given many Indians fans' reactions.
They're not educated. I mean, they are so offended at us being here that Chief Wahoo is so important to them. They identify with him like it's a human person. We just passed the bar over there where they gave us an earful. Oh, we love Wahoo! Yeah, go Wahoo, go home! Stuff like that.
The debate over whether Indian mascots honor or denigrate Native people spans generations. Villafane notes that in the past decade, many colleges and high schools across the U.S. have dropped such mascots, or else reworked their name and logos to be less controversial. But she says national teams like the Washington Redskins, Atlanta Braves, and of course the Cleveland Indians, are less easily swayed.
Well, I have to keep going. Every spring I dread coming because I live here in Ohio. And every year I want to quit, but I keep doing it, only because it's not right. This isn't right. This is so offensive to Native Americans.
A Cleveland Indian spokesman says he respects the opinions of American Indians, but adds it's a matter of individual perception. He says people think baseball when they see the Chief Wahoo logo. As for the game itself, the Yankees flattened the Indians 11-6. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
Two sisters from Oregon's Umatilla Reservation are playing one of their biggest basketball games tonight. As KWSO's William Robbins reports, Shoni and Jude Schimmel and their college team are competing in the NCAA championship.
The Louisville Cardinal women's basketball team earned their spot in tonight's championship game by knocking off number one seeds and former champions. And for Shoni and Jude Schimmel, it will be their first opportunity to try for the title of national champion. But in reality, both girls are already champions on and off the court. Following Sunday's win over Cal, Jude Schimmel was named the recipient of the Elite 89 Award for the 2013 NCAA Division I Women's Basketball Championship. The Elite 89 Award, founded by the NCAA, honors the individual who has reached the pinnacle of competition at the national championship level in his or her sport while also achieving the highest academic standard among his or her peers. It's a tremendous honor because they come from a place where the odds are stacked against them and yet seem to overcome every obstacle along the way. Kareen Sams is a family friend who says Shoni and Jude Schimmel have achieved rock star status around the Umatilla Reservation. Sams attended a party in the reservation's housing projects for the game that put Louisville in the final two.
When the game was over, you could go outside and you could hear people cheering. All the kids in the neighborhood had a basketball and were outside shooting. You know, they were pretending they were Shoni and Jude, boys and girls the same.
For tonight's game against Connecticut, there will be numerous gatherings at homes and in public places. A huge party for tribal members is taking place at Umatilla's Wild Horse Casino, and that scene will likely repeat itself throughout Indian country and beyond. For National Native News, I'm William Robbins.
The Indian Health Service and other federal agencies have signed an agreement to improve drinking water and sanitation services in tribal communities. The IHS announced the agreement today. It will work with agencies like the Department of Housing and Urban Development. One of the goals is to reduce the number of homes lacking access to safe drinking water and basic sanitation by 50% in the next couple years. During this week in 2012, the Alaska legislature passed a bill to help endangered native languages by establishing an advisory council. The council's job is to find ways to protect and restore Alaska native languages. The bill was signed into law by the governor the next month. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
The music, of course, is Aaron Copland's Fanfare for the Common Man. And what better piece of theme music to introduce our two guests who are going to tell us about it. The 21st of these wonderful programs that come every year at about this time, the Pillars of America Speaker Series in Juneau. With me are Jamie Letterman and Eric Forst, both members of, I guess, the Glacier Rotarian?
Glacier Valley Rotary Club.
Anyway, so you are the folks who have been bringing this thing together for a long time. Not you two, but the Glacier Valley Rotary Club.
Both us two and the club as well. We've both been working on it for a long time. It's been a lot of dedicated members that have been working on this committee for many, many years and bring some new people in every year, but there's a lot of us that return every year. It's just one of those labor of love kind of things you do.
Yeah, this is a terrific opportunity for Juneau because when you bring the speakers in, these are carefully selected folks who have real inspiring stories to tell, and it's a wonderful opportunity to sit down with friends and neighbors around a round table over at the Centennial Hall and hear someone basically get you up out of your chair and tell you why you ought to be moving a little bit.
That's right. And a lot of people, I don't think, realize how much goes into the selection of the speakers. It's quite an involved process. I think Jamie's been involved with it many years, and you know they start meeting, in October, November?
Yeah, shortly after the program ends, actually, just as summer ends, we will begin again in selecting next year's speakers. And we generally end up with a list of about 30 to 40 speakers that we whittle down to three. It's pretty tough, but it's a labor of love, and it's a very intense process. And you know, the way that we do the program, because we really want it to appeal to students, you know, which is a huge reason that, you know, it's a community service project for our club, and really the students and the youth are the reason that we do it. But we also, because of the sponsorship of the program, we want it to also be attractive and interesting to the business community.
So how many people are on this committee that does the selection?
There's about...
I'd say six or eight.
For the speaker selection, yeah. It's actually about five or six of us who are on that. And, you know, Eric and I think have both been on the committee as a whole for about 9 or 10 years. So it's bits and pieces of that committee that are on that.
And then once you've made a selection, do you take it to the general membership and have them vote or anything like that? Or are you just, you are the
board? The Pillars Committee is charged by the club to put this on and to come up with the speaker selection and make that selection. But they work very hard. I mean, they watch hours and hours of videotape. Or, you know, DVDs nowadays, but they have to sit through all that, and then they have to weigh the appropriateness of that speaker. They may be a phenomenal speaker, but may not quite fit in with the mission of Pillars. You know, so there's a lot of that goes into there. They get suggestions from the membership, they get suggestions from the public. They also have their own eyes and ears out there when they're traveling, and you know, all the Rotarians that are in the club are usually business leaders. They may be off at a convention somewhere in Dallas and see a speaker at a banking convention and go, oh my gosh, this guy would be great for Pillars. So all kinds of things like that play into it. And then, of course, you've got to get into cost. What can we afford to do? And, of course, just like everything else, that goes up and up every year, which puts pressure on the committee to really step it up and find those really hidden gem speakers that we can bring here.
And also to make sure that they're available for the dates that we do this.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is quite a commitment to come all the way up here. Usually, it's not just they can't just fly in for the day. Because of the way we structure the Pillars Speaker Series, they have to commit to being here for pretty much 3 days, and plus their travel time, depending on where they are in the country, that basically can take up an entire week for them.
Mm-hmm.
So that gets into a lot of scheduling issues too.
So what are the days that we have selected and gotten speakers for?
Well, this year our first program will be on April 24th, our second on May 1st, and our third and final on May 8th.
So 3 Wednesdays.
Always on a Wednesday.
Okay.
Always, they're all at Centennial Hall. The doors open every Wednesday at 11:15. So we encourage everybody to get there early to get the best seats. And also with parking this year, with the Slam Project and the closure of the parking lot across the way here, parking is going to be a challenge. So if you can carpool or, you know, public transit or whatever you can do to get here early and get here give yourself enough time to get into the hall, that's going to benefit you in terms of seating.
Did I hear you're actually considering a shuttle?
Yes, we are considering a shuttle. So hopefully we'll have some more information on that forthcoming.
Park people out somewhere where there's plenty of space.
Yeah,
and then
we're looking at something, maybe something down at the parking garage down by the library, or possibly over at the radio station, or any number of things out the road at Salmon Creek, out that way. But we're working on that. We'll have some more information coming out on that soon.
Right. With the downtown construction going on, I think that may be a real issue, is where to put your car if you decide to come to this. So carpooling is definitely suggested. Now, I understand when I went last year, I noticed that there's quite a little tight schedule at the beginning. You want people through the doors by 11:15, lined up outside because that's when you're going to open them, and then at 11:30 you're going to serve lunch, and at 11:50 you're not going to allow anybody else to sit down because it basically is full by then.
Yeah, it's basically full, and you know, it's we really want to be able to be respectful to the speaker and make sure that everybody's seated and all of the meals have been served, you know, before the speaker and opening remarks begin. So that's the idea. Need to have everybody in and seated and eating.
And I think that that's also part of the goal of Pillars, especially with the youth that we bring to the event. We want to impress upon them the importance of, you know, you're on time, you're in your place at the appropriate time. This thing has a schedule, and we want them to understand how that works and that there's a reason that we do it that way.
Now, you work in the schools to bring students in to this.
We have liaisons that work with the schools. Yes, we do have a committee member, Charity, who is dedicated to working with all of the schools, the charter schools, all of any school program, not just the, you know, Juneau School District at Thunder Mountain, not just the high school in Thunder Mountain and those. We reach out to any of the educational programs that are available that have students in that age range.
Yeah, in the middle school and 8th grade and higher is what we're really looking for come to the event, just because of the kind of event it is. We don't want to go too young where they don't really understand or have a good appreciation for what the speaker's talking about. But, yeah, it's a big job that Charity McKinnon does to coordinate all the outlying, you know, different educational programs that are out there, homeschooling and charter schooling and all that kind of thing, that she has to balance, you know, however many tickets. But I mean, the club, that's what the sponsorship is all about with the business leaders in town. You know, we go out and get sponsors for the event to put it on. Well, most of that is for tickets, because we give those tickets to the schools, to the students, for free. The students do not have to pay to come to this. And I think we give out
about 200 tickets go to students at no charge.
Yeah, so it's almost half of all the tickets for each event are given away for free to the students. And that's really the whole idea behind it, is an opportunity to get these kids into this kind of speaker that they otherwise might never be able to see, either because of cost or location.
I'm curious, what's the seating capacity of the hall when you set it up?
We can seat up to 525 for lunch.
And so, but you have 200 students.
Yeah.
At the beginning.
Yes.
Already given
right off the top.
So
yep.
There's only 312 chairs that are going to be occupied by folks from the community.
And all of our club members go.
Ah.
And
so,
all of them usually bring a guest. So you're talking another easy 75 are out the door right there. So, you know, and then there's two other Rotary clubs in town that they're also very in tune with this program. So people that want to go need to go quickly and get tickets.
Yeah, how do you do that?
They're at Hearthside Books. They're both locations of Hearthside Books has the tickets available right now.
Yeah, right now.
For all three speakers.
Yep, and they're $35 each, or if they want to buy the series, it's $90. That doesn't mean three tickets for the same one is $90. It's the series is $90. You clarify that.
But so that is a little bit of a break. You buy all three, you get a little bit of savings on that.
Can you reserve a table for a group?
We have kept that limited because tables get reserved very quickly. So reserved tables are for sponsors of the program and Juneau Glacier Valley Club members.
So if you want to sit with your friends, you need to be near the front of that line that forms up at the doors before they open it.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. And we also make sure that each table has students at that table. So there's two seats at every table that are reserved for high school students.
I was delighted last year to meet the high school students that were at my table.
Right. And that's really the goal of why we do that, is we want them to interact with people, business leaders, community leaders, that they might not otherwise have a chance to interact with and meet and appreciate what's going on.
So I think it's time now to whet people's appetites. I should say that on the on each of these speakers' weeks when they're here, they'll be in town before, and we will have them on this show on Tuesdays. So I will have the honor this time of being the host of all three of those interviews.
Awesome.
Which is wonderful. So Sean Harper and Josh Sundquist and Captain Charlie Plum will all be my guests on this show in the slot here.
And I think you're going to. I know you've done it before, so you know you really enjoy it.
It's one of the best.
Yeah.
It really is.
The hard part is probably making sure you don't give away any of their speech.
Well,
we'll have somebody standing outside there waiting to bust in here if they start giving away.
There are two hard parts. One is not letting them give away too much of their speech. The other is keeping the interview to a 15-minute slot, because these speakers, I want to interview them for an hour if I could. I mean, they're amazing people.
Yeah, their stories are just incredible.
Yeah. So, Sean Harper.
Yeah, Sean Harper is you know, one that we're really excited about. Sean is a former offensive tackle in the National Football
League.
He's on
April 24th.
He is the first speaker on April 24th.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, he was drafted by the Los Angeles Rams. That's way back in 92, for those of you that don't remember that. Now the St. Louis Rams used to play in L.A. He was played for them, and he had a pretty interesting career with the NFL. But he's gone on beyond that to just be a great motivational speaker. He's done all kinds of things all over the world. He's been a member of the Central Ohio Salvation Army Advisory Board. He's donated his time to all kinds of organizations. And he also co-chaired the Christmas Kettle Volunteer Program for the Salvation Army.
I think the most fascinating thing about Sean is I read that he started out as a young man with four different learning disabilities and overcame all of them to go on and become this fabulous football player, and then later executive.
Yeah, and it's just a classic rags to riches story. You know, he had all kinds of odds against him, all kinds of things going against him, like you said, with learning disabilities, poverty, his speech challenges. You know, he had the lowest GPA of his senior class. So, I mean, there's a lot of things that were stacked against him, and yet he overcame all that and went on to become, you know, a very famous, at the time, football player.
And we'll get a chance to hear his story and listen to him speak on the 24th of April, the last Wednesday in the month. And then on May 1st.
Then we have Josh Sundquist, who is extremely dynamic and energetic. And, you know, you would never know it. He was diagnosed with cancer at age 9, actually a rare form of bone cancer, given a 50% chance to live, and ended up coming out of it with flying colors, but less one leg. So, but that hasn't slowed him down at all. I think actually it kind of sped him up quite a bit.
And he's a ski racing champion.
Yeah, so Josh just has done some amazing things, which, like all of our speakers, you know, have just risen above all of the odds that you think would really hold somebody back. He was the only person in history to have been named to two Paralympic ski teams. And so that's a pretty amazing feat itself. And if anybody out there is familiar with YouTube and his viral hit, the Amputee Rap, which is actually pretty lively as well. So anyway, Josh is a best-selling author and has been featured on CNN, USA Today, NPR, just all kinds of stuff, and very inspirational.
And we'll hear Josh talk on May 1st, and then on May 8th, the second Wednesday in the month of May, we'll hear Captain Charlie Plum, whom I was surprised to find out was actually the guy who was basically in on the first part of the Top Gun training school.
Yeah,
we all knew it was real, but it made a terrific movie. But this guy actually did it.
I think this guy is going to be an amazing speaker. I think he's going to be one of the best we've had in a long time. I'm really excited to hear about his story. I mean, if you just look at, you know, just the little bio that we have on him. I mean, he was 5 days away from the end of his tour in Vietnam. He had flown, you know, I think he'd flown like 75 missions. Over Vietnam, and he got shot down 5 days before he was to be finished. And then he was captured, tortured, and put in a prisoner of war camp for 6 years before he got out and came back to the United States. If that's not overcoming incredible difficulties, I don't know what is. And I've just heard so much about him, and he's quite famous.
Yeah. So, three speakers, the last Wednesday in April, and then May 1st and May 8th. We'll have them all on the show so you can get a kind of a taste before you have to go. But if you want to attend these events and you're not one of the high school students or middle school students who will be receiving free tickets and like that, or if you're not from Hoonah, talk about that a little bit. We've got a special deal going on here.
Yeah, we do. And this is actually our second year doing this. Last year we had an opportunity to we do Rotary matching grants, and we were able to bring some students up from the
Haines
School District. So that was very nice. We hosted them to enjoy the programs as well. So that worked out very well, and this year we will be hosting some students from Hoonah. So we're super, super excited about that. I'd also like to mention that Sea Alaska was fantastic in stepping up and helping us offset the other half of our matching grant.
So students will be flying in. How many bringing in? Do you know yet?
I think it's 6 or 8.
And
the chaperones.
That's probably most of the Hoonah.
It might be. I don't know. Yeah. But, you know, it's just real quickly on the matching grant thing so people understand what we're talking about. We talk about that. But what happens there is we apply to Rotary International, our parent organization, and we apply and say, this is what we're going to do. We're going to give this much money, and we want to bring these kids in from out for the speaker or whatever the event is. And Rotary takes a look at that internationally and says, you know what? That's a great program. We think that's something worthy. We will match that for you, and we will match that money and double your money. So it's a way for us to leverage our money and do a lot of things that we might not otherwise be able to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is such an outstanding program. I'm really looking forward. I assume I'll be probably meeting you when we do those interviews.
Yes,
so
I'm here.
Really looking forward to this. And if anyone wants to come to this, you'd better go over to Hearthside Books right now and lay your $90 on the table and get tickets for all three of these.
Yeah, you don't want to miss any of them.
And don't forget, there's going to be a parking problem here. So stay tuned, and we'll bring you an update on whether or not we get the shuttle bus together and like that. Yep. And if not, then it's just going to be kind of a circus down here getting everybody. So please, if you can, think now about inviting some friends to attend with you and put together a carpool.
So, yeah, and if you're a student or a parent of a student, tell those students to go talk to their counseling offices and ask for these tickets. Each school has their own way of handling these tickets and how they give them out. Now's the time to get in there and getting your name in and saying, I want to go to that event. I have a lot of kids that work for me, and they're already telling me, oh, I've already gone to this speaker, I'm going to that speaker. So the students know about it. And if you knew of a student that would benefit from this kind of program, make sure they know about it, because maybe they don't.
Terrific. Jamie Letterman, Eric Forst, thank you so much for bringing us up to date on what's happening. Everybody go out and get your tickets before they all disappear, and plan on attending April 21st, April 24th, May 1st, and May 8th.
Thanks, Pat.
Fanfare for the Common Man, announcing the first awareness that we have here of who the speakers will be for the Pillars of America series coming up the end of April, the 1st of May. So be sure that you go to Hearthside and pick up tickets if you want to attend, because the seating is limited. Weather looks like those strong winds will be around for the rest of this afternoon. It'll be windy, rainy, heavy at times in the morning. Well, then rain. Showers in the afternoon, highs around 46, southeast winds 20 to 30 miles an hour with gusts up to around 45. And then tonight we're looking at those rain showers changing into snow by late this evening. We'll look at maybe an inch or so of lows around 34. And then Wednesday we'll have snow showers, possibly mixed with rain in the afternoon. We're looking at maybe another inch, so we could get as much as 2 inches of snow. And then Wednesday night we'll see snow showers with lows around 30. Thursday night, snow and rain showers likely, highs around 36. And then Thursday night, the snow is still likely with lows around 26 or so. So what's happening here is a big rush of Arctic air is pushing in from up north of us and is going to chill things down for the rest of the week. It looks like we'll probably be maybe coming out through the end of that sometime Sunday. And let's see, the forecast for Friday through Saturday night is mostly cloudy with the lows around 29. So the warming trend starts on Sunday with the highs up around 41, 43, somewhere along in there. So for the next few days, you can expect the hopefully the last little bite of winter for us here. A couple of things to look for tonight. On KRNN, we're streaming live, or there are seats available over in Centennial Hall for the ongoing wonderful Alaska Folk Festival this year, the 39th of these folk festivals. Juno Pride Chorus is on at 7 o'clock. At 7:15, it's Andrew McDonough playing folk rock, folk and blues. Callahan and his dad at 7:30. 7:45, Lucas Hagar. Worm Tongue and the Bananas will be playing at 8 o'clock. It's a student-formed, student-run jazz combo from JDHS. Tequila Sunrise out of Juno, two friends, two guitars, two voices at 8:15. Tracy Bird at 8:30, 8:45 the Hillbilly Honeys, 9 o'clock Carl Reese, 9:15 Alaska Travelers. They say this may be their last performance together, and they thank the Alaska Folk Festival for letting them grow up on stage. At 9:30, Myron Welling and Brent Tingey will play three original songs. And then 9:45, Chris Thompson, the Coral Creek String Band, Irene Miller and Sammy Burroughs will be on at 10 o'clock. At 10:15, Rick Haglin, and at 10:30, the show closes out tonight with Devil's Thumb. Jim Grammel's the host, and Ann Gifford will be managing the stage. So that's all going on at the Alaska Folk Festival, the 39th Alaska Folk Festival.
This is Bird Note. Who among us hasn't almost walked into a plate glass door? Or admired a tall, potted tree growing in a gleaming glass lobby? Birds, though, especially when migrating, run the risk of colliding with glass. Annette Prince, director of the rescue group Chicago Bird Collision Monitors, explains.
Well, birds come into an urban area, and all of a sudden they are in an environment that has a huge quantity of glass in the form of windows, lobbies, that are either transparent with attractive plantings on the inside that they may want to try to fly towards, or they may see transparent areas that they think they can pass through and get from one park to another. And there can be glass that's reflective, and reflective glass mirrors either the sky that they want to fly towards, an attractive tree, and they'll fly towards it, striking the glass often repeatedly.
A type of glass now on the market, called Ornolux, contains a UV pattern nearly invisible to humans, but that warns away birds. With millions of birds dying from colliding with glass every year, we want to find lighting and design options that are safer for birds.
These tiny birds are making these epic journeys of hundreds or thousands of miles, and I see them beat all these odds of weather and endurance and distance that they travel and having to avoid predators and try to find food and try to find shelter, and all of a sudden in what's a very small span of their evolutionary existence, we've erected these barriers that are an additional hazard for them. I think they deserve a better fate.
There's more to this story at birdnote.org.
It's about 29 minutes before 4 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore, your host today for Juneau Afternoon. My next guests are three people who are going to Australia, along, I think, with some other folks, maybe. I'm not sure. But these three are Pamela Garcia, who is in charge of the program, and two delegates, Madison Gilberto and Finn Cole. And I guess we'll get an update on what they're doing and a presentation on the program Saturday at Nugget Mall at 11 to 3:30. So, Pamela, tell us about the program. What is it that's taking these students to Australia?
Well, People to People is a student travel program that was founded in 1956 by President Eisenhower. Walt Disney and Joyce Hall from Hallmark Cards were also very important in establishing this program. And the premise was that in order to promote peace, world peace, that we had to get people from different countries come together, learn from each other so they could promote peace. And by getting people together, understanding each other, that would be more effective than governments. What anything that a government could do. So thanks to Eisenhower, who founded this program, and since then many groups of middle school and high school students have come together and traveled the world to learn about people from other cultures.
I'm thinking historically, this is a program that was actually started because of our awful Cold War relationships with the Soviet Union. And
yes,
the first of these students actually went to the Soviet Union, and Soviet students came here, I think. Was that?
I can't speak to that. I don't remember that, but I did.
I think okay. Madison is ready to speak to that.
Yeah. Actually,
talk right into that mic, if you could, please.
Actually, the first delegation went to Europe in 1963.
Also, the program started in 56, but it didn't actually put a delegate.
The delegates never traveled until 63.
I see. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, a young historian of the thing here, and the reason for the formation of the thing was because it was felt that if students got to know each other, then as they grew up, they would accept the fact that people from other places were not necessarily the enemy.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
So Australia's never been the enemy. How did we come to choose Australia this year?
Well, every year it's a different program. So this year it happens to be that students from Alaska, the Northwest Territory, is traveling to Australia. So I am the middle school delegation leader, and Sandy Palki from Juneau is the high school delegation leader, and we're meeting up with. Do you remember
Washington,
Madison?
Wisconsin, and
Anchorage and Fairbanks.
Okay. Yep.
We meet up with a delegation of 40 students, so they not only get to meet people in Australia, they get to meet their peers from other states and other parts of Alaska.
So how many Juno students are going?
Three.
Okay.
Middle school. And
three middle school.
And middle school.
And then eight or 11 high school students.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then the total size of the delegation from Alaska, or with Wisconsin and what's the other state?
It'll be 40 in the middle school delegation. There'll be about 40 in the high school delegation.
Oh, okay, mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. All right. And so you guys are on your way to Australia. When are you going?
Late June.
Late June?
15th.
Late June 15th.
Okay. So is it still winter down there then?
It's opposite because they're on the other side of the equator.
It's fall.
Yes.
Yeah. So you'll expect the leaves on the baobab trees to be changing color. Probably not. Anyway, so what have you been doing to prepare yourself?
We have been fundraising with Krispy Kreme Donuts, and we have trying to get our information out there to people who might want to donate or support the delegation.
Where is my donut?
Oh, it'll come.
Okay. Anyway, so you've been fundraising, selling Krispy Kremes. And
planning on the mall, science fair, this weekend to promote our delegation.
Okay. The science fair or Australia
like
fair?
Like a science
travel fair.
Okay. It's actually called a project fair because each delegate created a project to demonstrate some topic that they chose to research about Australia. So, Madison, what did you research?
Yeah, what was your topic?
I'm researching the Great Barrier Reef.
Ah, okay.
And Finn?
I'm researching the didgeridoo, which is an instrument.
I know exactly what it is. Yes. I have a good friend in Fairbanks who's quite an artist on them. He has like 25 different didgeridoos and plays on them. Whenever I go up there to visit him, he always gives me a little concert. So, yeah. That's for those of you that don't know, when you hear the theme to that Alaska National Public Radio program, there's a didgeridoo in the theme of that thing. I don't know exactly what the tie was, but they use it in there. And, of course, you hear it in all of the movies. Anytime there's a movie about Australia, the background sound is always this kind of strange bassy note that is the didgeridoo. Do you play?
I'm learning.
Oh, yeah?
It's difficult.
Yeah, it is. It takes a lot of breath control.
And you have to circulate
your
breathing.
Yeah, you have to do circular breathing in order to hold those long notes, yeah. Yeah, but a fascinating sound. It's unlike anything else. I don't know of another sound like that. This guy that I know makes them out of tubing. He has a bunch of didgeridoos that he bought in Australia and New Zealand, but then he also makes his own. So, okay, cool story. All right. So did you tie the Barrier Reef study to anything local? Because we have this huge fisheries operation going on here.
Actually, no, I did not.
Okay, I was just curious.
Yeah, because the focus is on Australia.
Right. So I believe there are some ecological hazards to the Barrier Reef. I think it's actually undergoing some ecological destruction.
It's deteriorating.
And what's causing that?
It's just kind of decaying.
Okay.
So
I'd heard it's a high carbon dioxide concentrations in the water.
I don't know that quite yet.
So when you do your presentations now, there's going to be how many of you are going to be?
There'll be the middle school delegation, so my three delegates, and then the high school delegation. So there'll be about 11, 12 projects at the Nugget Mall this Saturday.
Do you set up your project and talk about it, or do we come around and visit with you, or how does the thing work?
We'll talk about it a lot, and we'll demonstrate and walk people through it.
There'll be tables set up, so they won't be there the whole day. People are the delegates will be taking shifts. Their projects will be out on tables for people to look at them, and then the delegates that are there on that shift will help explain anything they know about Australia and about the People program.
So which middle school are you going to?
I go to Floyd Dryden.
Floyd Dryden.
And I go to DZ.
And do the other students at Floyd Dryden and DZ know that you're doing this?
Yes.
And how have they reacted to the fact that you're one of the delegates?
They're jealous.
Yeah.
What a delightful response. Anyway, yeah. So they'd like to be going too, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So were you picked or did you apply? Or how is it that you got on the team here?
We apply, and then we go to a meeting where they inform us more about the People-to-People program, and then we go to an interview with recommendations from three teachers, I believe, and two people who know our work ethic, and then we're interviewed and accepted in most cases.
Yeah.
And they'll ask us questions about how we work with other people, what we like to do on our free time, just basic stuff.
Pamela, were you on the selection committee?
Yes.
I imagine.
And
it was a
delight. It was a delight to read the letters of recommendations for Madison and Finn and the other delegates. And it's just being really proud of our young people for all the great things that they do and showing responsibility and motivation to do something beyond their regular school day. It's amazing.
So now when you all go down, will you go with them?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And where will you be staying? Do you know what kinds what it's going to be like for the kids when they get down there?
Yes, we have a day-by-day itinerary. And I know we first will be in Sydney for a few days, so we get to go see the Sydney Opera House.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, everything's very structured with this program. So it's all laid out every day where you're going to go. We'll be staying at a farm for a few days, and the students get to interact with the family and work on the farm, and we get to go to a rural school and donate school supplies, get to do some adventures like rappelling and snorkeling and crocodiles, kangaroos. We get to do all kinds of fun stuff.
I should tell our radio audience that Madison Gilberto has the most incredible smile, and every time one of these things is mentioned, she just beams because I can tell she's been looking forward to this for months. it's good to watch you get that happy about something. It's cool. Anyway.
So before we go, we meet every month, and the students have to be taking quizzes online, so they're learning throughout the year facts about Australia. They're learning their leadership and citizenship skills. We also have to do a community volunteer project. So this group, we've chose to help out the Glory Hole with their Empty Bowls project.
Ah.
So they're really involved outside of everything else they're doing.
Well, what a wonderful opportunity for the two of you and the rest of the delegates. So everyone gets to see kind of a glimpse into what you've been doing and how you're getting ready to go and like that. And this is all from 11 to 3:30 at Nugget Mall. Walk through the exhibits, listen to the students tell you the stories of what they've been putting together. Pamela, thank you so much for what has to be a huge effort on your part to put this program
to
kind of run the program together. And congratulations on both of you for making the cut.
Thank you.
All this hard work as you go along.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 9th of April, 2013. It was on this day, 1833, the first tax-supported public library in America opened in Peterborough, New Hampshire. Today there are more than 9,000 public libraries in this country, including the one in Peterborough, which is still going strong. It was Jorge Luis Borges who said, "I have always imagined that paradise will be a kind of library." And it was Dr. Johnson, Samuel Johnson, who said, "No place affords a more striking conviction of the vanity of human hopes than a public library." It's the birthday of the scientist who, along with his co-worker, Minxue Chang, discovered that the hormone progesterone would work to stop ovulation, and so they created the first birth control pills, which were approved by the federal government in 1960. Gregory Pincus, born in Woodbine, New Jersey, 1903. It was on this day, 1865, General Robert E. Lee surrendered to General Ulysses S. Grant, effectively ending the Civil War. Lee's and Grant's armies had converged in Appomattox, Virginia. Fighting began at dawn. Within a few hours, Lee realized that his troops were outnumbered and surrounded, and his choice was to carry on a guerrilla war or surrender with dignity. He said to his staff, "There is nothing left for me to do but to go and see General Grant, and I would rather die a thousand deaths." But he dressed up in a crisp new uniform, his red silk sash, gloves, a ceremonial sword. He thought he might be taken as a prisoner of war as he rode his horse, traveler, to the front lines under a flag of truce in full view of the Union Army. Asked for a meeting with Grant, that he wanted to discuss the question of surrender. So there was a ceasefire, and when Grant got the news, he sent word to Lee that he, Lee, should choose the time and place for a meeting. They found an abandoned brick house in town. Lee came in alone. General Grant came with a dozen of his generals and officers. They reminisced about the Mexican-American War, and then Grant brought up the subject of surrender. After the terms had been written and signed, Robert E. Lee rode back to his camp, and his soldiers were lined up alongside the road. They were cheering for him. He began to cry, and men reached out and patted his horse as he rode past. And it's the birthday of Hugh Hefner, Chicago, 1926, who put together the first issue of Playboy in his kitchen on $8,000, most of which he'd borrowed. That was in 1953. He had Marilyn Monroe on the cover and sold more than 50,000 copies. Here's a poem for today by William Carlos Williams, The Widow's Lament in Springtime. Sorrow is my own yard, where the new grass flames as it has flamed often before, but not with the cold fire that closes round me this year. 35 years I lived with my husband. The plum tree is white today with masses of flowers, load the cherry branches and color some bushes yellow and some red, but the grief in my heart is stronger than they. For though they were my joy formerly, today I notice them and turn away, forgetting. Today my son told me that in the meadows, at the edge of the heavy woods in the distance, he saw trees of white flowers. I feel that I would like to go there and fall into those flowers and sink into the marsh near them. A poem by William Carlos Williams, The Widow's Lament in Springtime, from the collected poems published by New Directions and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Reputation.com, helping professionals and businesses look their best when people search for them online. Learn more at 1-800-REPUTATION. Produced by Nick Vetter. Be well, do good work, keep in touch.
13 minutes before 4 o'clock, you're in tune with K2OO News. Be sure you tune over to KRNN, our sister station, tonight starting at 7 o'clock for the 39th annual folk festival. A whole bunch of people counting on will be on from 7 until the end of the last show, probably around 10:45, 11 o'clock from Centennial Hall. So you can stream it on there, or there's seats down at the hall, and you can certainly walk in and attend the folk fest. As always, it's free, but you're encouraged to take up a membership. I have some folks who took up a membership in Florida with me here, kind of. There are four people in the studio with me right now. Three of them are students: Logan Jones, Crystal Atoya, and Kyle Fagerstrom. They all went down to Florida with, did you go along, Justin? You were down there? Yeah, Justin Fantasia was the Saga volunteer who went down with them. And the four of them worked together. Were there other students involved in this thing, or was it just you three?
Total, there was 14 of us.
Oh, from Juneau. Okay, and you guys did part of the building on a Habitat for Humanity house down there.
Yep.
How's the connection work? How is it that we send people to Florida to build a Habitat for Humanity house?
Last year, Bullock got in touch with the Habitat for Humanity group down there.
Bullock is teacher Andy Bullock, right?
Yes, Andy Bullock, teacher.
Yeah.
He put together the whole program, arranged it. They just provide the housing for us while we're down there. We pay our way to fly down, and then we just volunteer for the week. He arranged it with the group down there. He just picked that one, mainly because it was a nice sunny place, and they were well organized and well put together.
Yeah, I understand the principle behind that. It's a good time of year to be out of Juneau and somewhere where it's sunny and warm. So what are your specialties? Are you all just jacks of all trade, or are you specific kinds of carpenter builders?
Well, we've been in the house build group pretty much all year long now, and we've been working on a house out in Lemon Creek, so we've been all working on our carpentry skills.
This
and
Logan talking here.
Yeah. On our carpentry skills and whatnot. So basically, we've just been learning all the skills it takes to build a house all year long.
Did any of the three of you have prior building experience?
No.
I was in the house build class last year for the first semester. And so that gave me a little bit of experience. And I've done some roofing and stuff in the past, and a little bit of framing, but not much else.
And Crystal, have you done any building before this?
Yeah, I was actually in the house building class second semester. Transferred in from basic construction. I was working with Creative Woods, but then I got switched into house building, and that's where I got my skills from.
All right. And had you done some of this, Kyle, or?
Just odd jobs here and there, little bits. I did the Habitat for Humanity program last year as well.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that.
That was a build here, right, last year?
No, same down
same
Florida.
Same place? Oh, down Florida. Okay. You're getting to be have you got property down there now in retirement home?
Just sunburn.
So how does Saga get involved in this?
Saga came on board with the JDHS house build program 4 years ago now, and we managed the project and the experiential education and act as general contractor.
Outstanding. Hey, this is a great opportunity. So when you guys started out, you, in your case, a year ago, and each of you, like, in the semester ago, did you come into the program thinking, oh, this will be a snap? And you didn't feel like that? No.
No.
Okay.
When I saw...
this Crystal.
Last year, when I saw the house they were building, I saw that it was a house and not one of those projects you work in a school. It's just, this is where people are going to be living. And I thought, this is not going to be easy at all.
Yeah.
And then with all the weather, it just made it harder. But at the same time, it gave me, like, something to look forward to during the school day because I get to go out and be outside.
Yeah. I wanted to ask, how do you balance this with the rest of your classes? I mean, this is like extra work, right?
It's actual scheduled into our day. It's
it
our fifth and sixth hour at the high school.
Oh, okay. Okay. And then if you take this program, do you have to take – is that going to set you behind any at all, or is this part of the
– Nope. It's an accredited program, and it's just like you would take any other class. It's just two class hours long as opposed to a normal single slot in your day.
Okay. So unlike the rest of your compatriots who are getting another book out of their locker, you guys go get a hammer and a saw and a carpenter's apron and take off for the house, right?
Yeah, right out of the locker.
Anyway, so I'm assuming that is there, like, just one Saga supervisor for each of these things, or is there, like, a whole crew of professional builders who are showing the students how to do the job?
So there's essentially one skilled tradesman, myself, who serves as general contractor, oversees all the students' work on the site, a teacher, Mr. Andy Bullock, who comes out. He's a metals teacher, teaches house build, and is also a roofer during his summer months. So he brings quite a bit of experience. And then I have one AmeriCorps member who works with me full-time and helps coordinate student experience. And then we sub out specialty trades like electrical and plumbing. Some drywall and painting work, and these guys get to job shadow sometimes, get a little bit of explanation from our sub-trades, and otherwise it's all us.
So I guess I'm curious, did the three of you feel like, based on the experience you've had, that you could actually build your own house?
Yes.
Yeah?
I'm not even going to lie. From this class, I feel like if not, I cannot build, like, I can build my house, yeah. if not improve it.
Yeah. Like, but, and also now you know when you got to call somebody in to do the stuff that needs to get done by somebody who does it every day, all day, I imagine.
Yeah.
For, like, electrician work or plumbing, stuff like that, we don't learn in the class, per se. We'll get a little bit of experience here or there, maybe. We'll get to see them, how they did it. But for most of that stuff, we leave it up to the skilled tradesmen. We do all the framing, the actual structure of the house, roofing.
So now when you're down in Florida, are you working, like, eight-hour days?
Yeah, we were working full eight-hour days. We'd get to the site about 8 o'clock and then take off whenever the work was pretty much finished up for the day.
So is that a good spring break?
You know, it's really there's a lot of satisfaction in it, you know. Really nice to be able to feel like you're doing something good for the community and everything, you know, give back a little bit. But it's really nice to be down there in the good weather and stuff too, you know, and it's hard work, but it's really good. It feels good to give
back.
You've
done it twice now, right?
Yes.
So do you won't get to meet the people who are actually going to live in the house, right? Or do you?
We do while we're down there.
Oh, do you?
They have to put in a certain number of hours working on the house, so we do get a chance to meet the people who will be buying the house.
Good people?
Yeah. I didn't spend a whole lot of time with them. I was mostly up on the roof doing the sheeting.
Uh-huh. But got to know them a little bit.
Yeah, I got to say hi at least.
Yeah. How about either you get a connection to anybody that is going to be a part owner?
I met the folks. They seem like a really nice couple and everything, and it's cool how I like how the humanity program works with how it actually brings the people in that are going to own the house later to work on it along with volunteers and stuff. I think it's a great thing.
Now, this isn't just limited to school students. Anyone who wants to can volunteer to work on a Habitat for Humanity house.
Yeah, they had other volunteers too. There was just a couple miscellaneous people, some other adults that were working there too.
President Carter wasn't there.
No.
He's very big on this program. He's actually done construction work. I've seen a film of him up on a roof with a hammer. Interesting guy. Anyway, so will you work on another Habitat house, do you think?
I'm really looking forward to going down there next year.
Oh, so you'll go down with the school?
Yeah, I'm a junior this year, and for my senior year next year, I'm really looking forward to it.
So if you're in your second, you're a senior then?
Yes, I'm a senior.
On your way out. What's the next plan?
I'm heading up to UAF, go up to college for different stuff, not going to work in the trades, but yeah, the opportunity came up, I would definitely work on another house to have that humanity.
Yeah. How about you, Crystal?
Oh, I'm a senior this year, and I'm jealous of Logan. He gets to go to Florida again. But my plan after high school, still undecided. Hoping to go to college, not slack off, take a year off.
Yeah. Well, guys, this is really cool. I love to hear the fact that you gave back. That's really admirable because not all of us have an opportunity every minute to give back. And when you grab one and take it, it's really good of you to do that. And I think you had a kind of an adventure out of the deal too, and a pretty good time. And you're right. It's a really good spring break, particularly when you can lean back and look at a wall that you helped put up. That's got a moment in it right there. Hey, thanks. And thank you so much for being the saga guy who supervised the top of this thing. Let's go out with a little music here. Our incidental music is provided today off of a CD called Paint the Sky by Bradley Joseph. Piano instrumentals, kind of nice to listen to a little quiet piano music. You're in tune with KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas, and we also broadcast on a set of translators throughout the area in the Valley and Auk Bay. We're on K276 AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, it's K269 AO. That's at 101.7. If you're in Gustavus, you can listen to us on 88.1 megahertz over K201 AM. Hoonah gets served by K220 BT at 91.9 megahertz. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, you can hear KTOO on K210 AS at 89.9. And in Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau on digital channel 871. KRNN is on digital channel 872. And KXLL can be found on 873. Tonight at 7 o'clock, KRNN will again be streaming live from the Alaska Folk Festival. So tune in if you're around the radio and come down to Centennial Hall and sit in and listen to the fine artists for a few hours tonight if you have the moment to do that. We're also online at www.ktoo.org, and that's how you can pick up our stream for KRNN. It's on the same website. I'll be back tomorrow with a program that will talk about the folks who are coming in for the Alaska State Improv Festival. Alice Rogoff, she'll be talking as the World Affairs Council speaker tomorrow night, and we'll interview her and the Boy Scouts Food Drive and the update on Eagle Crest. Stay tuned now for All Things Considered.